Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 3001, where Kurt Weller speaks to Bob Dobbs about media ecology, metaphysics, and life in general. Good afternoon, everyone. It's August 2nd, 2010. I am Kurt Weller, and this is episode 3001 featuring Kurt Weller and Bob Dobbs. It is Monday. I just got back from my monthly massage. It's good to take care of the physical. And I enjoy the kind of new age music and the whole relaxing vibe in the massage community. And here's the man who does audio massage, para audio massage, Mr. Bob Dobbs.
Hello, Kurt. Good to be back. My phone's Maui phone company's having problems, so if it disconnects, I'll call back on the iPhone.
I understand.
Okay, are we, you want to finish your topic on New Age music?
I was just saying that I enjoy the genre of New Age music, and I find it relaxing, and I was just kind of talking about that a little bit. It's not a huge thing, just something the guy says.
What guy says? You.
Me.
You.
Me.
Okay. All right. I don't think I've heard.
It's the same reason I call it the Plaza of the Mind. I like being non-specific like that, vague. A guy, me. See what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess the metaphysical value judgment is if you like New Age music, regardless of what people think of you liking it, then that's cool.
Oh yeah. I don't care. I just enjoy the. The nice soothing melody and you've heard New Age music, I'm sure, Bob.
In a couple of stores, not really, but when I hear it, sometimes it's nice, sometimes it's smalty, but I think I'm too relaxed to listen to that stuff. I would disappear or something if I had it on. So I actually I have too much slack.
Yeah, I kind of like disappearing for a little while, and that's a good description of it.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm half disappeared or something or relaxed already, and I shouldn't be pushed over the edge because I have to do all I can just to pay attention to your world.
Right, I see. Well, I'm glad you paid attention enough to make it on board the show today.
Well, I think I would say that I do pay enough attention. But if I paid, and I do pay extra attention, so I definitely would show up at the show, so I'm not sure what I mean there. I think I'm totally engaged, but maybe it's very, it reminds me of Dave Worster, the medium for cosmic awareness back in the 60s. He said, Bob, I'm down in my thalamic regions, not the hypothalamus, I think it was the thalamic. And he says, most of the time I'm not here, I'm in blissed out. And I can surface occasionally interact. I sometimes wonder if I'm like that, but I don't feel like I am. I think he does tune out. Anyways, I'm over my head with this. It's, you know, you can't really talk about yourself. You don't know yourself until someone else talks to you about yourself. So I don't know what to say about myself. I can't know myself I can't know myself within myself. So that's why I like talking to you, Kurt. You are someone we can talk casually, and then I can have some feed forward about what I am. So.
I'm glad I can be of service.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably very self-aware, but who knows? I'm willing to see areas that I'm not aware of. And that'd be probably why I talk to people. And when I'm listening intently, I'm there, and I'm actually learning about myself by you, by hearing your stories. You ever think of it that way? And when I can listen to people talk a long time because I'm actually hearing about myself. That's how I somehow it comes out like that.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I think that's the only thing you really can figure. I mean, like in an existential kind of way, that's the only thing you can glean from it, because the person might be just totally bullshitting you. But it's like how you're responding to what the person's saying, I think that's the most telling. And it does,
that's right.
You know.
Yeah, McLuhan, you say that
it's
poetry.
It's about yourself, yeah.
Yeah, it's my, McLuhan's idea that he said that poetry is not made of ideas, it's made of words. The words are what, it doesn't matter if the person means the words or not, the words activate word thoughts in yourself. So it's a massage. It really is a massage when you're talking to people. But you know, there's a good point. The masseuse has to be good. You can't massage yourself. So I guess it's not a massage. You do. No. Wait, yeah, no. A massage means you need someone else. Yeah, I need someone else. It is a massage. I need to have someone else massage me to know me. I couldn't know myself through myself.
Right. Right. Otherwise, it's like mental masturbation, basically.
Right. Which, in the ultimate end, all of it is, since apparently you never get out of yourself. So.
Right.
But
that's the next level up.
Yeah, and so you do have, you allow others into your life. Ultimately, it's massage, but you can allow your own reality can pretend you're including other realities. That might be love. Love might be. The intensity you can have the illusion of allowing someone else into your life, or you into their life.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was I always would fall asleep like when people talked about money and finance and stuff, and I never found it interesting. But I started to kind of get interested in it, and I have a friend, and last night he was just talking to me about finance, and he was basically saying like, you know, I tried to talk to you about this, subject, you know, 5 years ago, but you weren't ready. But he's saying the same thing. But now it's like I'm in the space for it.
Okay, so that means okay.
That means
I
like
to
he's said, you know, I mean, there's all like there's all this talk going on, but it's not until you're ready to kind of interact with it in the way that you need to that it makes sense.
Well, how did he know? How did he know that you're not ready just because you didn't respond? Yeah, I guess that's obvious. You're not
right.
Ready. You're,
right.
But
right.
You know what they say about money? Since everybody's involved with money, everybody is an expert on it. Everybody has an opinion on it. That shows your low self something that you had no opinion on what everybody expects you to have an opinion and interest in.
Right, right.
I don't want to say it's low self-esteem, but some kind, you know, it's kind of like a mystical void if you're not interested in money.
Well, I think before it was like just a kind of putting my head in the sand about money. Like,
were
I didn't want to
money?
Know about it.
Were you making money?
Somewhat, you know, I mean, you know, like underachiever.
Okay, so you're making more money now, so you have to be involved.
Right.
Right. Yeah, a couple of my billionaire friends, they all say this whole illusion of becoming a billionaire, you know, and it gives you slack, it does not give you slack. You have to worry about what to do with all the money. You got to pay people to look after your money. It's just another headache.
Right, right.
And it'd be interesting, can you get people to not be ambitious for the status of having a lot of money? Can anybody get that when they're young, or it's just impossible? The kid is going to go through a certain biological fantasy of identity through money, and that's what keeps the world going. That keeps Satan in business.
I think that's true, because there's such a, like, I mean, like, do you know Whit Stillman, the director?
No. When was he?
Late 80s, early 90s. And he did a trilogy called I think he called it the Metropolitan Trilogy. It's the movie Metropolitan, Barcelona, and The Last Days of Disco.
No, I missed those three. I never heard of that guy.
He kind of like was a modern F. Scott Fitzgerald in that like he had like these movies about these upper crust kind of debutante like balls and stuff in New York during the 60s and 70s. And you know, like I'd watch that in college, and it was just so like such a romanticized money thing. But the thing that's romantic about it is these kids aren't the ones having to deal with the money. They just have it. They don't even really have anything. They're just, you know, their parents have it.
Right.
A lot of people would like. You don't really want the money so much as you want to have somebody that's taking care of you that has the money.
Right, but look at those kids. Everybody knows those kids, you know, the trust fund babies or whatever. They have such strain and absurd behavior in their life because they have the stigma of trying to be normal and trying to hang out with people, but they're forced to hang out with their own type, and then that becomes boring, and then they get all neurotic because they can't hang out with people.
I'm not saying I want to be there anymore. It was like really romantic when I was younger, like when I was in college, was the point.
Right.
I was
now that's okay. So where did that romantic? I bet you every friend in your life had that romantic notion. See you're agreeing that you can't get rid of the social or sociobiological conditioning that a late teen, early 20s person has. How do you get rid of that?
Yeah, and I mean, because you're either going to, like, really want to embrace it and be a part of it and kind of wish you were there, or you're going to go the opposite where you, like, you know, you're, like, anti-corporate, hating everything, but you're still being controlled by it. I think it's something you kind of got to work through it as you get older, I guess. But, yeah, I do think, you know, with the way the media and, like, the way you're brought up, it's tricky.
Well, look at tribal people. You know, the rumors are, I was never, you know, a Navajo or anything, but the story is that they send the kid is kicked out of the tribe at some point or sent on a vision quest, you know, at some point in their teens or something, and they go out and have to fend for themselves, right? Isn't that the story,
mm-hmm.
the myth?
Yeah,
I don't know anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so they recognize, they know the kid has to connect with something on their own within their terms or something or test themselves. And have a sense of transcendence. And I guess our transcendence is the material floating free with no money work concerns. That would be a transcendent moment. That's the vision quest, is to get to that thing. I'm going to college because I got a vision quest.
Well, yeah, that's, yeah. And then you, yeah, and I mean, like, and college is such a weird time,
because it's only for the social vision quest. You only go to college to meet or connect with people or get laid, right? That's the main thing.
Exactly.
Because
degrees, yeah.
And it'll keep going because even though degrees don't mean much, you can't stop the sociality, the identity quest, something that kids require.
Nor should you, really. I mean, I guess you could do it a different way.
Well, let's admit it. Let's admit it. You know, President Obama says, well, I'd like to change society, but you dumb young kids are social biological robots, and you're going to keep your fantasy machine going, so all advertising is geared for you, 18 to 35. And so don't start protesting us adults to fix society, because you guys and your fantasy is what's being marketed back to you, so it's your fault, and get over being a kid. Not.
Well, he doesn't he?
He certainly does. Now, it would be awesome if I was president. I got to say this stuff every day, right?
It would be wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. You get real, I don't want to call it truth, we get great new weird pattern recognition every day. Can you imagine the president, he does his oath on the Bible, and then there's a pause, and he goes, not. Which is actually what Obama did. Remember, he fluffed his lines.
That's right, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, now let me tell you something. We're always on Obama's... What?
Oh, good. No, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. We're always on Obama's case with Ion. Ion's always telling us what's going on behind the scenes. Most of it we can't talk about. He's having a pretty bad time. And so he went on The View last week. The first
Obama
president
did?
To go. Yeah, he's the first president to go on a daily talk show. And Ion, you know what, Kurt? You're turning out to, what's it called, one-up or usurp my Wednesday show, because I dump a lot of stuff on you that I would be saving for Wednesday. But who cares? No one listens to this show, but so this is rehearsal.
Oh.
They will listen
Not
to this
yet.
Later.
They don't listen yet. Right.
Yeah, they will. Definitely will listen later. Later, in a few years, they'll all be, you know, they'll crash the server. Blog Talk Radio will go out, you know, it'll be knocked out. But the thing is, so Ion told me to watch it, at least get the replay, which the ABC had a replay. So I watched it. It was, first of all, Carolyn used to be on The View, and I know lots of stories about the scene there behind the scenes. But
wait, Carolyn used to be on The View?
Oh, yeah, in 99 to 2002, she was the resident alternative doctor. She'd be the
really?
One to come in every – oh, yeah, yeah. And then when Bush came in, the drug companies got the laws changed so that they could advertise drugs directly on television. They obsolesced the doctor policing part. And so here's Carolyn going on there recommending other things than drugs. So the drug companies were big sponsors of The View, so they asked her – they said, you can't have her on anymore.
Ah.
So Barbara Walters kicked Carolyn off. They did it gently. They didn't say anything, but we knew that's what was up. But so she hasn't been on since 2002 or so. Anyways, I was doing the dishes or something. That's when I might do this phatic listening. And I couldn't look at this. So disgusting.
Wait, did
ridiculous.
You say phatic or spastic?
No, phatic, P-H-A-T,
phatic.
Listening, phatic listening. I mean, they're phatic, I'm just listening to it. If I really was paying attention, wanted to know, I'd look at the face and get all the multi-level nuances. So I tried to look at it, but it's so ugly, so ridiculous, their faces, their body language, you know, the crew on there, I couldn't look at it. So I just listened to Obama. But what was really funny is that Obama came on, and eventually he got serious and listed off what he'd accomplished, and I won't go through that. But I was struck by the guy said has to say the same thing every president says. That you cannot. It's the same president been for since Eisenhower, I guess. They cannot. They have to say the stupid. I believe in the American people. Yeah, everything's disappeared. Everything's screwed up. But I believe in the American people. They'll be back. We've got. I don't even know what the word is. We've got
resilience.
Resilience. Yeah.
Moxie. We got moxie.
Yeah. Now, here's the point to me. Why, I don't think they're going to be able to get another president. Nobody would want that job. It's stupid. You can't say anything interesting. You have to say the same crap every day, and all you do is take the heat for everything. What a stupid situation. And any intelligent person wouldn't do it, or anybody who's interested in their slack or well-being. And I also noticed, I was surprised, I have not heard any Obama ever, really. I never followed any of this stuff. A couple of YouTubes Buzz Kosten made. I caught a few excerpts, I think. I had his picture or something in YouTube. But I was amazed that he apparently is an intelligent guy. He couldn't even say the crap cliches properly. A lot of ums and ahs. And then I vaguely remember people complaining that he was just a teleprompter president. I was just amazed at how incompetent he was, or how he
wow.
had to be incompetent. Look and talk incompetent.
Well, you know, because he's a difficult act to follow.
Well, what way? Because it's so bad?
Well,
he's
W. Bush as being like the
post-communication
president. So maybe he's trying to like do some like ill communication, you know, like.
I just realized. Yeah, it's hard to follow him because so high sights or high ideals or ambitions were set for his image. Everybody thought he'd save the world in some way, and
right.
so if he couldn't save the world, which I guess is where I thought he might have a bit of intelligence, and now he's reduced. Maybe he sounds worse now because he's lost his confidence. Actually, lost his confidence. His polls are down, and he's not as fluent. But I didn't. So he can't. No one will want to be president because you would try to be Obama. You try to go in like him, and if he couldn't do it, why would anyone want to do it? So you're right. He set an agenda that no one could live up to.
Yeah. Well,
Okay, so are we got an hour or 2 hours?
An hour.
Okay, so we're going to get to Wild Palms in a minute. Did you watch it?
I watched the first episode.
Oh, damn. We can't talk about it.
Well,
okay.
We can talk about the first step. Well, we can talk about the I can talk about anything.
Okay, so we're not going to talk about Wild Palms.
Okay.
Unless you want to just talk about the first bit, but I know the whole story.
Do you feel like you need to? Does it need to be a whole show, or can it be like a little segment of the show to talk about the basic premise of Wild Palms, and then go back to it next week when I finish?
Okay, you start to in a minute. Let me just see if there's any more about. So I was surprised. It was good to listen to it and see. You know, why Ion saying, do not pay any attention to the media thing, because I was also thinking all this attention, the media, they got to focus on this losing proposition, the presidency, so they can abuse it and make crap. Can you imagine being a journalist? It's just ridiculous. You Americans have such ridiculous lives now. It's really tragic in a way. Maybe you're not included. You're just, you know me, so you get something rubs off, but
I mean the human, the whole situation is
the whole human situation. Now that's what Gnosticism is. Gnosticism believes traditionally it's a fallen world, you know, and a devil runs it. People are becoming Gnostic by the Android meme. The Android meme is making the world look so ridiculous, and their lives then get infiltrated by the Android meme, so they become ridiculous. Everybody's turning into a Gnostic in some form. It's a fallen world. And they say what you just said. I don't know. The whole human situation is screwed.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know if it's like – I don't know if I feel like it's like necessarily a negative. I mean, it's just kind of like there's a certain ridiculousness to it. And I kind of like – I've been grooving on that lately. It's like a lower –
okay,
like
but
the,
what is
it's
that
like the
ridiculous?
Natural order, the natural state of things is chaos and not order, and people tend to get an ass backward, I think.
Okay, Ion would come in and say that if you recognize that whatever you say happens, the words themselves, whatever you say happens, that's one situation. If you don't recognize that, then you think there's no outside world that's chaotic. But from Ion's point of view, and maybe some of the New Age people, there's no chaos if you know you're creating what you say. What you say creates immediately. So I'm not saying that's true. And there's the other view that there's an external reality. And Ion talks about there being an inner kingdom and an outer kingdom resolved in your middle kingdom, which is your now. So the whole thing together. So but you're stating the view that you can't control your life, that you're subject to chaos.
Yes,
and
which is true.
Now you're listening to New Age music. What about the New Age platitudes that you can? I don't know if people understand in the New Age world that you actually create everything you say right then. It's not like I intend. I'm going to think this thought, and I'll intend it to come to me. No, the very thing you said makes it. So all that we're saying right now creates what the words imply.
Right, the whole like basically you're God and. Like the beginning was the word. I think that's just pillow talk.
Okay, so what's the alternative?
I think that's to cheer people up.
Yeah, and what's the alternative? That one should accept being depressed?
No, I'm not saying I'm even depressed. I'm just saying I'm kind of just enjoying.
You're not here. You're not really here is what you're saying.
Is anybody?
Yeah. You're agreeing with Beefheart. Not really here. Just hang around with my friends. Hang around for my friends.
I don't know. I'm like I'm thinking. I feel like Logia. You know, like giving a massage today. That's I don't know if this is a metaphor for something, but I was watching Wild Palms, and there's, you know, I realize, like, I bet you out of 50, 60% of the Robert Loggia appearances in film, he's getting a massage.
Really? Yeah, he's usually an exec. Okay, he's the hero in this. He's the main culprit, the Tim Leary guy.
Right.
L. Ron Hubbard guy or whatever. So you're saying he's often shown as a corporate exec kind of guy in,
or a mobster. Well, the 6 of 1, half dozen of the other.
That's right.
Massage.
Or a mobster. You get the massage.
So
well, that's very appropriate. Very appropriate to our topic
here. When I was getting my massage today, I was thinking about Loggia, and I thought about doing a Loggia imitation for the massage therapist. But then I thought that would be inappropriate. You know, like there's a kind of etiquette to the whole massage world.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to go, yeah, that's great, yeah, you feel that tension. Yeah, get a little lower there, yeah, I'm going to work that out.
Is that what he did? Is that what he does?
Well, you know, now he'll be going, yeah, and then, but he'll be talking business the whole time, you know. Like, so he'll be like... You're like, oh, yeah, well, we got to do that merger and acquisition. Oh, yeah.
We should have a massage while doing this show.
Yes. You're right, Bob.
You know what?
We should do the show while being massaged, both of us.
Yes. And I'm saying that the masseuses would be reduced to laughing so much they wouldn't be able to do it. Then we could have a tantrum, you know. Come on, push up, get your hands back on me.
Yeah, get in that glute. Get in the glute.
Yeah. Okay, so getting Loggia. Yeah, it's interesting how he to me is a B-grade actor, and. You know, I never saw him in any major roles through the years. I recognized him in 93 when Wild Palms came on. But why did he get the main role? I guess he was the only one around of his generation that could fit that image in a way, I guess.
Well, it's weird, too, because it's kind of a weird stretch for, you know, the casting on that's just odd. I mean, you get Jim Belushi and Robert Loggia both in roles that they're not usually... that they usually wouldn't play. I mean, when you think of a patent lawyer, you don't think of Jim Belushi. You know, Jim Belushi is usually like a blue-collar guy, and Loggia is usually like either like a teamster or like a gangster. He's an exec, but he's always shady, so he doesn't come across as a guru type. So maybe they're trying to cast, an opposite kind of thing, make it seem more futuristic or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, Kim Cattrall...
Right,
Kim
she's Cattrall. In it.
Was she on Sex in the City? She was later, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was one of them. And she was in that, and she was in Escape from New York. No, Big Trouble in Little China. So
yeah,
she's been around.
She was an acquaintance of Carolyn's.
And then
Did you hear what I said?
She was an acquaintance of Carolyn's?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to overreact because then you're going to say that I'm, like, buying too much into, like, the whole...
Well, why would you care? Don't worry about what I think. You should welcome that kind of criticism.
Remember.
We need to have the show as...
that's right. This is a show. We're not just talking.
Yeah, I'm lulling you into a false sense of personal intimacy here.
All right. Tell me again. So Kim Cattrall, she's great in that.
I have to look at...
Bob, come on.
I'm
going back in time. And then I'm going to say Kim Cattrall, and then you say Carolyn knew Kim Cattrall, and I'll react appropriately.
Okay.
So, and I had Kim Cattrall as the sort of femme fatale on Wild Palms.
Yes, and she passed through Toronto, and there was a little interaction with, some interaction with Carolyn. And, so I heard of that, so I would look at her with... you identify with her. Oh, there's someone who knew someone I knew.
Really? That's awesome, Bob. Is that better?
No, because, you're trying to be something. Look, the point is to allow anything to be said, not to not even to try to be whatever you're trying to be there. In other words, don't object.
That's what I was doing, Bob. But I didn't react when you said Carolyn knew Kim Cattrall, and then this happened.
And I didn't react to your reaction. I didn't care about your reaction.
Right, exactly.
So we see. This is static.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
It's all beautiful, yet not so good. You know. I think this is our worst show we've ever done so far.
So we'll probably get the highest ratings on this one.
Yeah, it probably will. Right. That's right.
That's usually how it goes.
Okay, here's the plot.
Hold on. Here's an antidote.
Bobby.
All right.
That's great.
Let's get back to business. All right.
So I'm looking at the wiki. I'll begin to read the synopsis and just see what it triggers off, because I don't know how much really what events you stopped at. It says Harry Wyckoff is a successful patent attorney. So Harry Wyckoff is James Belushi, right?
Yes.
Right. In 2007, in Los Angeles. In 2007? Oh, yeah, it's
a future thing. Yeah, I was trying to figure out when it was supposed to take place. That sounds about right.
That's interesting. 2007, and I thought it was on in 93. I end up in L.A. in 2007, and then 2008. But I have a sense of knowing what L.A. was like in 2007 because I talked to James Martinez all the time about it, and that was when it was going nuts with the cell phone. The cell phone and American Idol and all that stuff made regular acting and acting courses and acting schools obsolete. You know, you had to kill somebody to get a gig. So look at how the idea of the hologram. Here's where the movie fails. Just instantly comes to me. It's all this sacred little space where the hologram is projected into the living room. Have you seen that amount in the first part?
It's built around the L. Ron Leary character by Robert
but
Loge.
Here's as I think about it, it's because 2007. I know a lot about 2007 LA because James and I used to talk a lot about it on Cashflow before Ion showed up, about his social dynamics, watching the chip body just go nuts in LA in so many areas that he could see. So it was fun to talk to him about it. So I think of that chaotic, there's chaos, 2007. And you think of the nice, secure environment those people were in to have a little hologram. If it was actually today, the hologram would come in the living room and you'd be blipping it off and taking calls or editing your MySpace or doing blog talk with Bob. That's totally unrealistic. And I'm actually thinking that whole mood was actually the period, 92, 93, coming out of George Bush the first and going to Clinton. The full impact of Clinton had not started yet when that happened. It was a very low, passive time in 93.
That's said a lot about how basically everything is just a reflection of when it was made.
Exactly.
I was catching on to that too. You know, I mean, everybody, you know, the whole house being furnished by IKEA doesn't necessarily make it the future. It's still 1993. And when you're watching it, you know, there's still a TV station that he's working on.
And that's long gone.
You know?
It really was about 1993. It was about Leary is going to be dead in 2 years in 1995. He's now talking about computers. He has a little bit of cachet with Mondo 2000 magazine, not so much Wired. Wired is just coming out, Wired magazine. The McLuhan revival is going to start right around then, and he's into McLuhan just a bit ahead of that. He retrieved McLuhan for himself. We're talking to Leary that weekend. That's what the amazing thing is. We were interacting. My typical is anarchy. I'm interacting with Leary at his peak in his recovery of his image. You know, he became very popular in the L.A. scene in the late 80s, early 90s. A lot of stars and that sought him out. I can't think of her name, but that small starved and short girl, pixie girl back then, she was a friend of his.
Oh, Winona Ryder.
Yeah, Winona.
It was the goddaughter.
That's right, yeah. And there was these others, friends of hers. So this, and what I remember, it was so idyllic. It was almost like Maui. The whole environment there was California calm. And did they go? Did they take you to the Venice Beach simulation? Did you see that?
I haven't got to that one yet.
Yeah, there's an underground. There's an it's a counterculture, an underground culture that
right.
is where people who are not in the corporate matrix there. And so they over interact with that world. And that's Venice Beach, maybe Santa Monica Beach, you know, which Jerry Fiocco was part of, and I went there a lot with Jerry.
Bob, you're starting to break up a little bit, like this weird, pixelation of your voice.
Okay. Did it just happen in the last 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Not right now.
Now's okay.
Okay. I was just saying, I know that area. I know Venice Beach. And so that what struck me, since it was produced by Oliver Stone, who I think has an office in Santa Monica, and Bruce Wagner, the writer of Wild Palms, I saw him in a couple of the stores in the Santa Monica, Venice area. They were describing it was about their neighborhood, about their reality. I mean, even the home, what's his name? Roger Logia. What's the name of the character?
I forget. Let me get to that on the...
Oh, yeah, Senator Tony Kreutzer.
That's okay.
It's maybe more of a Beverly Hills home, but it could be a Santa Monica home or Brentwood home, very close to Venice in Santa Monica area. So anyways, that idyllic period, because the recession has happened in 91, 92, it starts getting out of it, I don't know, 93, 94. It's very, as I think about it, it really is that the mood of 1993 is in that movie and in that TV series. And the concerns about, if Leary's coming back and he's coming back with the computer mythic stage, which is the environment of preference, the mythic stage, he's saying virtual reality is going to be great. He's promoting that. You can see how Bruce Wagner just took the return of Leary. It's almost a satire on the return of Leary, with the hologram being the the hyper medium, but the internet was a hologram. Do you know about that? That the global theater creates the effects of the hologram, not the hologram, but in the 1670s, life was hologramic. You were inside the global theater created by the satellite and early digital life. By the 90s, you could personalize your own little hologram. The computer is what I call homeopathics, big hologram shrunk to, homeopathic levels. So that whole homeopathic level is coming in, and you're going to have one-on-one communication, narrowcasting it's called, where this guy can project a hologram into you. That is exactly what was coming in 93, 94, 95 with Netscape and those early people, the whole mass getting on population. So as you watch it, look at how much it's the present. That time.
Right. I mean, because, it feels more to me like it reminds me so much of when I was in college, because that's, I was in college when that was on, and just the whole excitement about, all that futuristic stuff.
Yeah.
And, there's that excitement's not really there anymore. It's almost like by 2007, everybody had a kind of been there, done that.
Right, because
about
the attitude...
All.
I would say that what's that period is when you're still in a a passive reception of the wonders of technology bestowed on you by the gods of the technocrats. You know what I mean? You're in a passive role. That's gone once you get into the last 10 years where people make their own media. It's all proactive, like you're
right.
doing.
Yeah.
You never thought in 93 that you'd be on a radio show, so to speak, having your own place.
No, I thought because you would have had to know somebody probably at a radio station, or you would have had to have some sort of, technological skills. And, I mean, now it's it's really simple where anybody can do it. And we've talked about that before. And and the Wild Palms is still it's like an elite, top-down kind of thing instead of a cross. where people are just looking up. I mean, nowadays nobody looks up to anything. They don't even really look at anybody else. They just post videos of themselves jerking off.
Yeah, and they don't have time to take in anybody else. They're too busy harassed by the general collapse of the chip body landscape. And if they are engaged, it's just propping up their own scene.
Right.
Yeah, like doing what you were just saying. So look, that's why that Wild Palms would actually be a nostalgia movie now. You'd watch it now for a romantic time when you were in that passive receptacle situation. And now today...
Well, it's true, because I have a full collection of the Mondo 2000 magazines, because I was really into that back then. And I was watching Wild Palms, and I was looking through the Mondo 2000, and I was just really kind of struck by how it's like 1950s toys. I mean,
that's
it's really
right.
No different. You know, it's that same. It's just gone.
Well, that's really good. That so you know, for me, it evoked Mondo 2000. I didn't know if you knew it, but you're totally agreeing with what I was reminded of. And it's 50s in a sense. It's a consumer paradise. You know, but it's software consumer, or the idea of a hologram, and you know, having sex with a hologram was the big dream. But you're right; it's any passive form of receiving technology that the 50s, 60s, 70s represented. I don't know if the 80s represented that. You see, I don't know why. It's interesting. There was a different mood in the. I think everybody. The 80s was a horror show, the Reagan era. People thought it was 1984, so it wasn't that 50s comfortable zone. But definitely 93 was, because you were going in, well, Clinton was in, and at first people thought that Clinton would be a new kind of relaxed baby boomer president. You know what I mean? That the, it definitely was,
right,
the war was over, the Cold War was over. So definitely, yeah, that which is like the 50s, a period of contentment. And passivity, and that's pretty interesting that you actually drifted. You just were the mood of it made you go look at your Mondo 2000s, right?
Yeah, totally. It was weird because it reminded me of like when I was excited about that stuff.
Right. Now that's what's really good. Now this is where modern media or just the replay of things. That is why McLuhan would say we live at the highest decibels of consciousness. He was talking about that before the instant replay. But with the instant replay, this is the point. Who can go and look at their life? Okay, I should say it this way. McLuhan writes in the late 60s that that people in the 20s, when TV came in, they started replaying old movies, which these people in the 20s had seen in the 20s and 30s and totally forgot about them a long time ago. But now they were back. And McLuhan said, and he'd be speaking about his own generation, they were surprised at how much they'd forgotten. Now, today, we have the baby boomers and the subsequent generation who have replay as second nature. You remember everything. They actually maybe tried to, McLuhan then talked about in the 70s, people tried to take on amnesia as something to, you know, to forget because there's too much to remember. So you're now here. This is a guru process or a spiritual development process where you are forced to look back at what you were. What other culture can make you aware? What other situation can make you aware of what you were other than you're watching a show which evokes a period and you bring out your magazines from that period? That is a whole new kind of self-awareness that shouldn't be knocked. It's not wrong or childish. It's a level of awareness citizens have today that they never could before. Then I'll just finish by saying I'm looking at this show, just some teenager TV show, and high school and that. They're all so aware. Whatever the parent does to them, they go, okay, you're going to give me this routine. They know every routine the parent's going to do because they've seen it.
Right.
They've seen it on TV shows when they were 8 years old or something. Everything is very interesting. You know, these kids grow up knowing it's a fake reality, no matter what the parent does. It's staged.
They know that, if it gets bad enough, they can just call the police and have their family, their parents arrested.
Yeah, yeah. But they take a very, it's a very cynical posture. Like everything's cynical, which Arthur Coker writes about in the early 90s. Coker's books are about this period. But he knows it's not the, he's talking about the horror underneath the contentment. But what you just went through there, That's a valid spiritual exercise.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was really kind of, I don't know, it really made me think, and I was glad that, I just thought it was such an odd coincidence that I'd been thinking about wild palms, and then you had mentioned it on that last episode, and
Now I'm bringing up what I'm reminded of, Modern 2000, and that's exactly where you went with it.
Yeah, it's weird. Very cool.
Okay, when you say weird and cool, you see, what do you mean by weird? Certainly, yeah, it's never been done. You have no cultural reference of anybody telling you that's what you're going
to
do. And we could tell
to me, weird is when, I guess synchronicity is kind of weird. That's a shorthand for any kind of synchronistic thing like that.
Well, I don't know if though synchronicity is the right word. So in the future, some kid will be talking to his kid. They'll have the Blog Talk Radio. And then they'll go, oh, you're trying to do a Kurt Weller Dobbs thing on me? The guy will say, gee, I was looking at my old whatever they look at today, you know, in 2010, and here's 2020. And I was looking at the whole stuff, and I got this weird feeling. It was sort of synchronistic. And the kid will say, don't give me that Dobbs Weller stuff. And that's, we're symptomatic of it too, right there. We're projecting ahead that will be known and discussed as a cliche. See, how's that? I tell you, it's more than synchronistic. It's anamorphic. It's twisting. It's surrealistic. MC Escher going up and down at the same time. It's existential illusion. It's an optical illusion for your whole being. It's a Trump Leal. Your goddamn life's a Trump Leo life. You know? This has never been said before. This is good. We got to a new place again, Kurt.
I know. See, you even said this would be our worst show, and I said, "Well, let's just get." I did that little antidote, and it gave us that vitamin B12 shot in the arm that we needed.
Well, that's why I'm always in a sunny disposition. Even if it's bad right now, I know it's going to get better. It inevitably does. It's just going to get better. I can't lose. I can't fail, Kurt.
No, failure is impossible.
In my case, I got too many options. I can bring up any kind of interpretation of what we're doing.
You're like a cat. You always land on your feet.
Yeah. So let's go back. So I like. It's funny, you know. You brought up the movie last week. It reminds me of a whole period. I've thought of that period. I've thought of my encounter with Leary. I've thought of Wild Palms, and then I forgot about it all. Now we're talking about it's all back here. It was a great time. It was back when I was doing pixel stuff at Jerry Fialka's, you know, in his little cottage where he lived in Venice. And
pixel stuff? What does that mean?
Well, you can go on my timeline and look in 93, 94. Jerry used to take his pixel camera or his video camera, and I'd be staying there. I stayed there for 6 months with Carolyn, and he would just come home from working with Zappa, and he'd want to just start talking to me, and he put on the camera, and he'd try to prompt me. But back then, he was a terrible interviewer, so usually I ended up, like, you know, just spitting on him or making fun of him. But those tapes are available. Sometimes it got interesting, but you can see them on the timeline, and that was that quiet period. I mean, everybody got wiped out by the internet. But everything got, it was already disappeared analogically. Then the digital Android meme replayed the disappearance for everybody.
That's true, because Wild Palms was pretty much pre-internet. I mean, there were people on the internet. I mean, the internet was there, but it wasn't like...
No, it wasn't an environment on the mass, huge level. That starts in 95 with with Netscape, and this is 2 years before. And, like, it's really interesting. Look, it's a passive thing. You receive – this is very important. The 50s thing is passivity. You're a passive consumer. You cannot be a passive consumer today.
No. You have to be involved.
Well, out of panic or out of there's nothing certain and you can't even get to anybody because they're too busy doing their own Blog Talk Radio, it's very hard to connect anywheres or have a space to connect in. It's that kind of it's a paranoid involvement,
right.
Panic involvement.
The only reason I even do this show isn't that other people listen. It's that when my clones the more me recorded, the more my clones will know how to act.
Yeah, you know,
see,
there
the
was
amount
a...
of shit you've done, you know, you can, like, you know, you could have all your little clones, like, as they're gestating, listening to your constant barrage of conversation.
Right.
Yeah,
now,
that's what I'm
you know,
talking
see, that's why I like talking to you, Kurt. You mentioned stuff that I can, that's sort of interesting and unique, but then I can correct it. I can refine it. And so
thank
I don't
you.
Know if, what?
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. But the, so I'm looking at what you just said, creating a clone of yourself. There used to be a TV show in Toronto on public TV called The Education of Mike McManus. He was the host. He'd interview everybody, including McLuhan. And you can even see an excerpt of him with McLuhan in any of those McLuhan documentaries by his daughter. And he called the show The Education of Himself, right? The Education of Mike McManus. Now, he'd passively have a new guest, and he'd learn from all the guests. That is what you're implying here, the education of Kurt Weller, but that's not really what it is. There's something else going on here. You're saying that you want your clones to know how to be you, right?
Right. You understand
okay.
what I mean by that. It's a science fiction kind of bullshit.
No, I understand. I understand. I'm just trying to figure out where the flaw is, what's the part we're leaving out there. How you're saying that you are a talk show voice.
That I am what?
A voice on Blog Talk Radio. See, how can they be you? How can they be you listening to you talk about your life? That's what you are, a guy talking about his life. So your clones would do nothing. They would sit around having Blog Talk Radio.
Right.
They wouldn't live a life.
Well, no, it's a ridiculous it was like a 1950s kind of idea, you know? I'm going to have, like, all these clones of myself that are going to act exactly like me.
Yeah, but they won't get it from hearing a Blog Talk Radio show.
No, I don't think. No, I mean they wouldn't get it at all. No matter what, I don't think really.
No, they can be programmed with your life, but the you're saying you're doing the Blog Talk Radio so that the clones can know what your life's about. No. That if they just use the Blog Talk Radio to get programmed, it would be very limited.
I said so they know how to act.
No. Then they'd go around being your life, interviewing people or talking personal stuff. You don't act like this 90% of your life.
That's true. Yes. 99%.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is actually your closet self. This is your closet self commenting on how you live. And so with this Blog Talk Radio, you have screwed it for your clones because they're going to get all confused listening to this part and won't have any idea about how you live your life because they'll be processing all these shows.
And they'll be wondering, why was I doing that?
Yes. You actually will. You better, if you want to have healthy, you know, resonant clones with your real self, we better stop this show. I told you I'd find something in there. I'd find a flaw. I didn't even know where it's going, but I just keep thinking it through, you know, counterintuitive, find the point and prove to Kurt that it's not what's happening. And I did it again.
Oh, yeah, you always like doing that. Yeah, that's why I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and I always do find out a way to do it. And it came to a funny line. We got to stop this show. No clones for you, Kurt. You're going to be confined to the hell of being just one person.
Yeah.
This obviously brings up JW, the man that allows Ion to speak through him. There are now five of him.
What?
Oh, listen, maybe did I tell you about the helicopter incident? I think it was last week.
No.
You might, you know, now dig this. This is, we're coming up. We only got 5 minutes left or so. Or do they let us go indefinitely?
They let us go a little over, but sometimes they'll cut us off. So.
Okay. So here's what happened. On last Wednesday, I call up JW at 5 to 8 my time to get ready for the show, and we talk, and then we start plugging in, and we get plugged in with the station, the internet radio station. Then we're doing the show, me, Carolyn, and Ion with James. And then the second or third hour, all of a sudden, there's a big noise coming from Ion's phone. And he says, we get the notion it's a helicopter landing on JW's estate. And Ion says, oh, there's JW. And I'm thinking, what do you mean there's JW? The JW, we're interacting with JW even though it's overtaken or possessed by Ion. But why would Ion say there's JW over in a helicopter? So I don't remember. We didn't pursue that much. It just was an odd statement. Well, after the show, I continued talking to Ion. And then after about 40 minutes, Ion says, I'm finished with Ion. So Ion disappears and JW comes forward. He comes out of his altered state, right? You understand that?
Yes.
Yeah. So JW goes, hey, 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 like inappropriate tone. Hey, hey, hey. I go, what's up? And he said, so you did the show? And I said, yes. Yes, we did the show, you know, with you and Ion. And he said, well, no, I wasn't here. Didn't you get my message? And I said, yeah, now listen to this, Kurt. Listen to this. It even gets better. More what? I want 5 whats to come out of you over the next 30 seconds. So, so he says, I said, we just did the show, and, you know, and he said, well, didn't you get my message? He said, no, I haven't checked. He said, oh, I told you. It's my wife's birthday today. I took the helicopter. We went to Chattanooga, Tennessee, whatever the place is. And Tennessee, and had a restaurant there. When I got there, had the meal, I realized I wasn't going to get back in time to do the show, which would be to his time on the East Coast. And so he left and I said he couldn't make it. And then he's saying, so you did it? And I said, yeah. Well, how did you do it? What happened? He said, well, we called you at 5 to 8, and you answered the phone, and your wife was there, and she usually never speaks to us or gets involved in the chatter before we do the show. She just lets JW get ready, so she gets out of the way. But she started talking to me and Carol, all chatty. And you said, I'm saying to JW, and you said, oh, it's my wife's birthday today. And I said, oh, it's McLuhan's birthday too. So this is a July 21st show. Okay, it's McLuhan's birthday, your wife's birthday. And I said, okay, let's do the show. So we do the show. And when I mentioned that his wife spoke to me with him at 5 to 8 before the show, he says, how can that be? My wife was with me. So I said, I guess there's more than one of her now. And JW goes, wow, that's incredible. And he knows her more than him, but he said, you guys actually did the show with another JW. And I said, yep. Now, what do you think of that? you would have said 5 whats, but, you know, I told you not to, or you set you up so you wouldn't. But, yeah, you're saying what again, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, are they like, is it that rift riding thing you're talking about?
Riding? No, there have been several JWs for a few years now. I think with Ion, it's made it 2 more, so there's 5. Now, I never knew this, but we found out. Now, I'll just quickly go to the next incident. A couple nights later, we're doing this series on the Bible, on the Book of Revelation. It's incredible. Never heard before explanation of that book. And we're getting ready to do the unseen chapter 23. It's never been seen. The Council of Nicaea censored it.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we're preparing to do that, and JW's saying, okay, we're wondering how are we going to get this. We don't have any transcript of it. And then we came up. Well, we'll get Ion to dictate it to Carolyn. She's a very fast typist, and she'll type it up, and then we'll go through it once we type it up. So we're going to do that. And then JW said, you know, I don't think it's too much. It's going to be too long. It'll take Carolyn 2 years to type this. And he just didn't think it could happen. And Carolyn said, well, that's your opinion, JW. We'll see what happens with Ion. And so we set up 5 hours later to do a session with Ion. So we're getting ready to do it. And then just before we do it, JW says, check your email, Carolyn. And she looks in her email, and there is the whole chapter 23rd with charts and diagrams, incredible stuff never seen before, right in her email. It was put in there by Ion. Ion manifested it.
That's crazy,
what?
Bob.
Yeah, what?
That's crazy, Bob.
I know it is. So then we go to tape the session, and And I'm talking to J-Dub. We're getting ready, and we go into a teleconferencing thing because it's better clarity there than just doing it over the phone and speakerphone and all that. So we go into the, so we're getting ready to go into the place, and all of a sudden J-Dub is not saying anything. It's dead. It's silent for a minute. We don't know what's happened to him. And then J-Dub comes back, and he's back on. Oh, okay, you're here. So okay, let's get in there and start this. So we go in and we do 4 hours, 4.5, 5 hour taping of the first 22 chapters of chapter 20, the first 22 verses of chapter 23. Incredible stuff. And after 4 or 5 hours, we say goodbye to Ion, and then JW is supposed to come forward and give us some pictures that he saw. Well, he never comes forward. There's nobody there when Ion says goodbye. And we don't like to leave JW hanging there. But this has happened a couple times before when JW does not answer, it's the other, one of the other five JWs. He doesn't like to speak for some reason to us. So you can hear us on the recording when you buy it. You'll hear us go, oh, there's no answer. After a while we go, I guess this is another JW. So that was that. We end the recording. So then we hang up. I call JW back, and he answers the phone and does this, hey again. And I said, okay, what's up this time? And he said, well, just been listening to music for 5 hours. I said, wait a minute, JW. We just finished. Now, this, I may have the sequence screwed up. Maybe the when JW didn't answer, that was a later show or the one before. I don't know. I'm mixed up now. But anyways, because it doesn't make sense. We would have expected JW to not know. But anyways, we didn't. He says, hey. hey. And we go, what's up? And he says, well, I've been listening to music for 5 hours. I said, well, we just did a whole session on chapter 23. He says, you didn't call me back. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it sort of went quiet and dead, and then you weren't there, and then there was a disconnect. And I waited for you to call back. You didn't, so I started playing music, and I got into it, and I'm still playing music 4 or 5 hours later. And I said, well, what happened is that we never got disconnected. You came back on the phone, but now it's obvious another JW came back on the phone. And we did the whole thing with the other JW. So the first JW, I'm telling you, Sue, says, okay, it's happened before, it happened again. So there's two incidents, Kurt, of this.
So do you think there's a JW body for each of the five bodies, and that's why they act differently?
I have not seen it. I have not seen these bodies have been in JW, though when I first heard about this, you can go back and listen to the tailgates on May 5th or 12th, and we're at many hours into it, and Ion had left, but then he came back. And now I know when he comes back without coming back with me, because I usually take him into these places on the phone, if he comes back on his own, it's another JW. And he came back, and so I just asked him, this is back in the May 12th, May 5th or so, hey, what's JW doing right now? Because I'd like to know what his body's doing. And Ion says he's sleeping. I says, okay, so if he's sleeping, his mouth is moving, right, in his sleep? And Ion says, no. No, this is it's not that.
You're totally breaking up there. I couldn't understand any of that.
Okay, well, just wait a second. It only happens periodically. At least I'm not disconnecting. It's probably the break. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there it goes again.
Okay, it's still screwed up.
I can hear that well.
Am I clear now?
Yes.
Okay. You know when it starts to waver like that, I think it probably wants to disconnect, but we're holding it on, so it just wavers a bit and then fades out. So that's good. So what was the last word you heard? Clearly.
Oh, Jesus. It was about
May 12th and the guy JW sleeping. Did you hear that part?
Yes, that was the last part. May 12th,
yeah.
JW sleeping.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking, okay, we're talking to the JW with Ion talking to us, so is his mouth moving in his sleep? And Ion says no. So there's a pause, and there's a lot of other people listening. It's a group phone call thing, and I'm going, So, and then I think Ion just fills in. He says, this is not that JW. This is another JW. And that was the first time it was ever said to us. And we go, wait a minute, what? This is another, you're coming to another JW? Yeah. And there's more than one? Yeah, there's three of them. And so he then says, you remember?
What?
Everybody. yeah. I don't go wet. I don't lose my cool because what Ion comes up with. No, actually, I did go. I did think what. No, I did. I don't know if I said it, but yeah, I'm human. I go what, and but he quickly Ion said, Bob, you remember when you were with JW in Lawrence, Kansas, in October 2008, at that meeting? And I said yes. He said, if you notice, JW left the breakfast table a lot. And I said, no, I don't remember that, but I remember my image of it was a lot of commotion, a lot of busyness, people moving around and that. I didn't notice JW listening or leaving. And he said, yes. Every time JW would leave the table, go out of view, the other JW would come in. And there were actually three of them sitting at the breakfast dinner, you know, intermittently. So that was – and so I was quoting a mood that did happen. You know, I didn't know JW was coming. He was just the same guy, I thought, coming back. But later in the day at the meeting, he was acting different at different times. And that's not on the May 12th recording, but I talked to Ion and JW about it later. I actually, in retrospect, can see that because he did different things in the meeting. He was different times during the day. I thought it was just because of the people we were with and how they were. So anyways, so here is Ion's telling me that there were several, that's when we first hear about it. It's right there on a public tape. So we've been developing it since then, and we've had several instances where JW does not answer when Ion says goodbye. So I was a bit confused. It must have happened then after JW didn't, the one the other day where JW wasn't there, was listening to music. I don't know if it was that one or the next one where we say, oh, there's the other JW, he won't answer. So what's going on there? I'm told that there's five chemical bodies. And you're saying, does it relate to five bodies? No, because there are actually more JWs and there are many Kurt Wellers. And when a baby's born, when you look at a new baby, there are hundreds or thousands of other babies of itself in other worlds, and they're all in touch with each other.
I'll buy that, Bob.
I don't know why you buy it. When I first heard, it's the weirdest scenario I'd ever heard.
But I'll buy it.
Yeah, because it's a post-information society. You're going whatever.
I'll buy it because there's no way to prove it or disprove it.
Not yet, but maybe in the future there'll be a way. I've asked his son to film things going on in his house, but his son hasn't done it. The other interesting thing is JW, he has people on his property who mow the lawn. And so they know to mow the lawn and clean the mower after. It cannot have any oil dripping or anything. JW is very picky about that thing in the lawnmowers. So his son comes in the other day complaining, Dad, you wanted some people, them to mow that little section over there? Well, they mowed everything. And not only that, there's three mowers sitting there in the driveway that haven't been cleaned. Three mowers. And there was nobody in the staff. There was nobody here to do it. So who the hell did it, Dad? The three JWs did it.
Really?
Well, who else did it?
I don't know.
And there a couple of them, two of them are rude and a little unruly, and they may be the ones that don't talk to us. You know, they don't deign to talk to us humans, or no, they're human or something. They just don't want to talk to me or something. But they're rude, and
how,
so
how
they
would. That be, Bob?
I know. Well, that's how. Well, the rude people are, you know, rather ignorant, so they don't know any better. And this, and they're so rude, they didn't clean the lawnmowers.
Wow, okay.
So I'm just telling you how life will be when you have your clones. This is relevant to the topic.
I didn't think it would be as fun. I thought it would be more fun, I should say.
No, you thought it would be... Not a you didn't see, you never think a technology will bring in headaches.
Yeah, see, I thought it would be like my way to like instant Slack, you know, where I just, the clones do all the work and I just sit back and relax.
No, you see, you think you're in an isolated zone. You don't think you're going to have kids.
Like it's more like that Michael Keaton comedy where he had the clones.
Yeah, that I only saw that for a few minutes. I didn't see it much of it, but you're saying that was pretty slackful for him in that movie?
Well, he thought it would work, and then it didn't work at all. It was awful.
Oh, okay, no, that's good. Now, that's a good art form movie. It's showing you the disservices of what comes, because you can just imagine. You got your clones. Now, if you have kids, they're going to get involved with the clones and have problems and crazy unforeseen things. It's going to be a headache. Do not clone yourself, Kurt, is, I guess, the message of the show today. Because you already have other selves. I mean, Ian has told me that I think I mentioned this to you, I'm going to meet myself one day walking to the beach.
Yeah, you did tell me that.
Yeah, and the funny part is I'll be with Carolyn, and then after I talk to this other version of me, Carolyn will leave with him because he's neater than me.
Wow. Well, hey, but why don't we wrap this up so we don't get cut off and we can control our own end?
Okay, I just want, let's go back. What did you make? Okay, the main point of watching Wild Palms, which you've never seen before, but it brought you back to 93. What else in the content was interesting? And it doesn't matter if you get cut off. We get cut off because we'll go over this next week. But what was interesting about the storyline? Let me read you to remind you. It says, Harry Wyckoff is a successful patent attorney in 2007 in Los Angeles, living with his wife, Grace, a formidable suburban housewife and boutique owner. Is that Angie Dickinson?
No, it's Dana Delaney, and then Angie Dickinson plays her mom, who's a cohort of Loggia.
Right, and who? What does Kim Cattrall do?
She's the ex-girlfriend who's Loggia's, like, courier or something.
Okay, and she's Harry Wyckoff's ex-girl.
And she has the missing son that she asks him to track down.
Who does she ask? Harry Wyckoff to track down?
Yes.
Okay, but they were formerly together. All right, it says Cody, they have two children, Cody, a television addict, an upcoming sitcom actor, and Deirdre, a slow developer who's yet to speak a word. Wyckoff's mother-in-law, Harry, Josie, is a socialite radiant with charisma. So that means Harry Wyckoff is the son of Robert Loggia. Is that the way it works?
No, Robert Loggia hires Harry Wyckoff.
Yeah, but Josie is his mother-in-law. Oh, she's the mother of Grace.
Of Dana Delaney, yeah.
Oh, okay. At night, Wyckoff is plagued by strange dreams in which he's pursued by a rhinoceros and has visions of palm trees. You know, rhinoceros, wasn't that, that's Rhino Records.
Right.
You know, that's an independent label, Rhino Records. Or, you know, a nostalgia label, or, you know, they do special stuff, right? They used to.
So he's being pursued by the past.
Right, and
maybe he knows he's actually in the real 2007, and all this stuff's in its nostalgia trip.
Okay, well, I'm not going to comment on that.
Loggia even says, "Yeah, rhinoceros is all that's left of the unicorn."
Okay, so it says one day Harry is visited by a former lover, Paige Katz. That's Kim Cattrall. Oh, okay. Who asked for his help in tracking down her son Peter, who disappeared 5 years earlier. As Paige works for the Wild Palms Group, which Wyckoff's firm is going up against in court, their meetings raise suspicions and cost Wyckoff a promotion. I forgot about that. So Wyckoff is competing against Loggia.
Yes.
He's investigating.
Yeah,
he's investigating Robert Loggia. Right? Is that what he's saying?
True. Yeah.
After this, Wyckoff gladly accepts the job offered him by Page's employer, Senator. Wait a minute. Okay, so he doesn't, Senator Kreutzer, they don't know how he's connected at that point, right?
Right.
He's offered, he gladly accepts the job offered to him by Page's employer, Senator Tony Kreutzer, as head of the business department of his television station, Channel 3, though he's puzzled by the senator's role as the founder of the synthetics religion of the synthetic religion and philosophy of new realism. Now, is it, do you know at that point that Kreutzer is involved with different things?
Yeah,
I don't want to
give
it away.
Right. In the first episode, you find out that he's got like a dark side and that he's kind of this guru. He's part of this corporation, but then they've all got this cult like tattoo of a palm tree. And you can kind of tell that, like, you know, with the underground movement, that there's something there with him.
Right. Well, what's the Wild Palms group in this first sentence? Page works the Wild Palms group. What's that understood to be in the first hour, first part?
That's like the company that Loggia runs. That's like a virtual reality company.
And is it part of the religion? Is it known to be part of the religion?
Yeah, because Jim Belushi says right away, that's that guru guy running that business, or the senator. So he knows he's got his hands in all this different stuff.
Okay, so he should notice that he's investigating Kreutzer's Wild Palms group. He knows, and yet he's working for the senator. So he half knows he's a double agent, so to speak.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but I don't remember. That's probably not emphasized too much. I don't recall. He cost him a promotion. Does he leave the law firm? Does
yes,
Wyckoff,
he does.
Oh, okay. So he's lost. So he's not. So then, therefore, he wouldn't be investigating the Wild Palms group anymore.
Right.
He would know about it, but he's not doing it. So he could work for Kreutzer because he could just jump to the other side, so to speak.
Right.
Right, okay. And it says, Kreutzer plans to use a new virtual reality technology. Now, look at how they project a passive hologramic thing, a consumer's model, and there's actually new virtual reality technology being advocated by Leary and Mondo 2000 and Wired magazine. This movie is not aware of even 1993. They're not even aware of what's going on.
No, not really.
It really is about a new kind of television, consumer 60s television, where the image comes into your room and you fuck the image or something, right?
Yeah, it's like a Nintendo, basically. I mean, that's all it is. They're not talking about even interacting. You're interacting with fake characters. You're not interacting with real people.
So
it's a total pre-internet conceit.
Right. Now, here's the interesting thing. I was critiquing Leary that weekend about his absurd notions of what he thought virtual reality would be happening. So I actually was being Harry Wyckoff, criticizing Senator Tim Leary, who was a PR man for the pre-internet, but promoting the internet. He was involved with it, promoting the virtual reality aspect of computers, and had no clue of the disservices and crazy stuff that would happen when the internet came in. And I was telling him McLuhan would be onto this, and I was using McLuhan stuff or whatever, and my own stuff to him, and he didn't know what I was talking about, and he walked out of the interview. He ran out.
See?
So I actually was, to the degree Harry Wyckoff is competing or going to pull the rug out of Senator Kreutzer at some point, I was doing that to Leary the very weekend. Very great Xenocrity for me that weekend.
You're Harry.
Yeah, I'm Harry because I'm pointing out, you know, Harry is going to have a problem with Kreutzer probably. I don't know what you've seen. There's going to be a conflict.
I vaguely remember, I've seen it used to be on two VHS tapes, and I had the first one in the late 90s, and so I remember, vaguely remember parts of the sun and when David Warner shows up. But I have to just watch it again.
Right. So you know that Wyckoff is going to have a bit of a problem with Kreutzer.
Yes.
Okay. Leary and I didn't come to fisticuffs or anything, but I was critiquing him. You can see the tape. Go on there and see what I'm saying to him. And then he runs out of the room, And some cameraman followed him into his other room, and they said, "What are you doing? You know, leaving this taping going on live, not live, but creating a show." And he said, "Oh, I wanted to check my email. I wanted to check my answering machine." Which, you know what? Just strikes me now. That's incredible. Just struck me right now. That's actually the coming reality. When the actual internet comes in and everybody's on the cell phone, they always have to interrupt their interactions with people to take the phone. That actually was the actual future. The actual disservice of this wonderful virtual reality would be nobody could stay with you for more than 5 minutes because they had to take their calls. That's incredible. That's
right.
That's actually what was acted out there. Just realize that.
Right, right. They work so hard to create this ultimate immersion, but no one can become immersed.
That's right. There's always the other in a new form, always dragging you out of your own solipsism or dream, always interrupting you.
Right, constant.
And that is the existential life. That's the drama of cognition. You have to have the other. I've talked to Ion about this a bit. You have to have the other to mix it up with and create with and bounce off of, but it's always interrupting you, and that's the joke of life. You can't control the interruptions that go on, and the interruptions now are five-bodied interruptions. Like, you had to stop doing this blog talk radio. You had to stop being a creator, a producer on the chip landscape to deal with some chemical body issues, which was your divorce.
Right.
Now, before, you could say, yeah, divorces interrupt life, but you had a whole other life on the blog talk that was cut off because of the divorce. I mean, people, if they have a divorce, it interrupts them, but they function. They don't lose a whole landscape of creativity.
Right, and I lost that one landscape.
Yeah.
I kept a couple of the other ones alive, but yeah, I just didn't go there for a while.
Yeah, you went to the open mic audition stuff, right?
And yeah, just like kind of like drunken karaokeing and
we'll call that the TV body because you create your own.
Right, I went back to the TV body basically. I went back to being my 1993 self in a way because I wasn't really interacting with anybody. I was just kind of passively taking stuff in.
Right.
So like
and if you
I hadn't done any of my own stuff. I just was like.
That's right. And if you do karaoke, you're playing off. I understand you play the cliche songs that the TV landscape has made famous, right?
Right. It's almost, to me, the karaoke is just basically like, it's like, or like the Guitar Hero thing. It's not really, you're not really interacting. You're just kind of.
Yeah.
You're mimicking what's going on the screen.
Yeah, life with the Android meme. You're participating consciously what's always going on once the Android meme took over in the 70s.
Yeah.
You see, that's what karaoke is, an Android meme pastime. When there is this whole other track going on that you can jump into and go along with, but it guides you. You have to imitate it. It's all you can do is imitate it.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, even stuff like American Idol, it's basically that. I mean, it's like people, they have like, they can sing, but they're not doing anything. They're singing other people's, they're doing what's been done.
Yeah. And whereas here, and what you did it with your friend Greg, was that his name?
I did the show with Greg.
Yeah.
We do that.
And
other,
you guys,
we do the other channel. Yeah.
Yeah, and you'd wing it and make it up and create your own stuff, right?
Right.
Like we're doing here. It's totally different than reacting to some given stuff. And we're actually making – I mean, I just made a whole – I've talked about this Leary thing at various times with people and made fun of the fact he even said when I talked to him after through the Evergreens, after he died, I talked to him, and his explanation of why he ran out of the room, he said he was tired. He says, "Bob, I was tired that day," and that was right. He was tired because we took too long to get it started. The crew took too long to set up. We didn't even really get going until the afternoon or something. And so he'd been hanging around for 5 hours, and he was alcoholic, I guess. He probably needed a drink or something. But And he says that through the Evergreen, so showing that he knew. I didn't say. I just said, why did you run out of the room? Just see what he would say. He said, well, as you know, Bob, I was tired that day, and that was true. But I don't think that's the reason he ran out of the room. We used to laugh about he ran out because he couldn't take me and Nelson, and he just wanted to get away from us. He didn't like how we were talking about modern media. And then the joke is his alibi is he won't admit it, is that he's answering the answering machine, and we have him on tape doing that. And but now I have a whole new – that is uncanny. Here we were talking about the coming – well, we were talking about the virtual reality as it's presented in Wild Palms. That's what everybody thought it would lead to. That's what Mondo 2000 then were talking about. No one knew that everybody would get on the Internet, that nice little bulletin board chat forums would become chaotic, manipulative community with everybody flaming each other. You know what I mean? I mean, like Alt Slack's a good example. That no one knew that hyper communication would have such a quote negative spin to it, and it's amazing. It always is that way in Hollywood. They're always calling something futuristic, but it's technically, if you're perceptive enough, a reinforcement of the past that Hollywood hopes stays there to keep Hollywood's consumer's model going. So
It's just more, and I think like there's even a drug they take in Wild Palms to help the hologram work better.
Well, that's the combination of Leary and L. Ron Hubbard, so to speak.
In the pharmaceutical companies and the entertainment industry. I mean, if they could bridge that gap, that they love that, and they never have the foresight to really delve into what it might be, but it's almost impossible. No one could have predicted it, really.
No,
but you're saying you did.
Well, I didn't. I don't know. I'd have to go back and hear what I said. I'm often surprised. I'm not a person who's up on technology per se. I don't know how anything works. You know what I mean? But I do. I'm pretty uncanny and figuring out the general broad social effects of these things. And I don't have to go back and hear what I was saying back then. I know McLuhan was pretty good. McLuhan did say in the late 70s that the computers would lead to people recovering their private identity, maybe a simulated private identity, and having a sense of doing your own thing again, that the mass media effect of the Reagan era or before would be diminished. So I knew that, but I didn't know it would be called Netscape, and I didn't know there'd be – well, I knew there were forums. So I would say only had glimpses of it, maybe didn't know it at all. But I did know – what I do know, whatever's coming in the next 10 years, like when we bring in our our group here, it'll have effects that I can't foresee. But I do know they'll be – I'm ready for the fuck-ups. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It'll be – yeah,
As I say to people, when I meet people personally, they often like me, and then they say, yeah, I really like you. I'm glad I met you. I said, well, in a while you won't. You won't like me.
Wait, in a while you won't like me.
I say that to people. I predict the disservices, the tetrad, the flip.
Well, yeah, and that's a good insight, Bob.
Yeah. No, and... It does happen. I mean, it's not their fault. It's just that they can't take what the endless insights, or they think I'm repeating the same thing, or they think I'm a megalomaniac, or they realize they want to take their own power on and they don't want to be distracted by me. There's all kinds of natural reasons why it'll run its course, and the person will flip into – they'll be surprised they actually got to this mood of sort of being irritated by me when they thought it was I was the best thing in – since a stopwatch or something, at first.
Well, that's just a natural entropy with anything.
Yeah, but in the moment, people forget that. This show could turn into a real headache for you and I in some way that we can't foresee. You know, a real problem, but I don't foresee it. And with me on the helm here, it won't go too off wire because I'm not here, so, and you're half not here, so we actually maybe bypass the disservices.
Well, we're both being massaged.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and
so
there's no ego in it.
Oh yeah, sure. You got that tone there. Yeah, no, there's no ego in this. There is. Now let's call it not chemical. Listen to this.
The last part broke up. What did you say?
I was saying that I started to agree with you saying, yeah, there's no ego in this. And then I said, no, that's incorrect way to say it. There's no chemical body ego in this, but there is a profile we're creating that is designed to bug or titillate or help or whatever other people. That's a new kind of ego. It's not a chemical body, you know, body ego.
I would have said it anyway when I said there's no ego because there's always an ego.
Okay, and then
they,
I caught that.
Especially with anything I do. I mean, I'm pretending like, oh, I've got no ego in this, but I mean, come on,
Right, but did you hear me? Did you hear me agree? Pretend that what did I say at first? That I pretended to. No, I agree. I said no. Yes, there is. I doubted your statement. Did you hear me do that part?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay, so I got your joke, though I didn't know whether you meant it or not. But I'm thinking that there is a, you got to be specified what kind of ego, because you said, I have ego in this. Normal ego is abrupt with other people. But you're saying I have ego in this. That means in the chip landscape.
Right.
You know, it's not, you, when people have an ego in an office, egos clash in an office, they don't feel they have an ego in this. They're just egos. Chemical body egos. I think there's a difference.
Yeah, I think so too. And this, I try to remind the chip body ego that it's not the chemical body ego, so it can be different and more malleable.
That's
if
right.
You end up being like all slack, where everybody like thinks they're really getting punched in the stomach.
Okay, I had it down. Let me see. The ego here, we will pretend to get along, and we may get along, and everything's great. We would not come to blows. That's like saving face. No one loses a cool in front of the camera. They understand that now. But, okay, so we're not. But the ego is not to appear violent, but to be proud that I didn't get into a fight. That's a different ego. Ego in the chemical body is you're fighting and you're proud to handle the fight, right? And you can take it or you win the fight. Here we're being proud that we look like we're not fighting.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, we're proud of the.
And so it's a different kind of ego. There's still the pride element, but it's a different. What is that? It's the ego that's proud is part of your chemical body, I guess. But it's sort of, there's my chip body. He's a great kid, you know. I love my son, my chip body son, because, you know, he performs well, you know. He doesn't get,
well,
doesn't
like,
make a fool.
You know, I what I realized with all slack is, like, in the beginning, I would, like, get really pissed off chemically. And then I was realizing, you know, this isn't anything more than Nintendo, and it's like my video game character getting killed. He's taking the hits, and I'm not. I mean, there's no reason for me to take it seriously because I can die an infinite number of deaths at all slack, and I'll always come back, you know,
that's
yearly,
right.
Whatever I say.
Now, it's good you bring that up because that defines what I knew. I never, when I got online in 94 and got into all slack and that, I knew not to have a chemical body. I knew that wasn't there, and it didn't matter what I did, and it didn't matter what anybody said to me. I did not, and many people, they went on the internet looking for camaraderie and were totally pissed off at the flaming world they got into. Even among friends on some hobby, they'd everything screw up.
It happened with a buddy of mine. Me and him cannot communicate online together because we bring our chemical bodies into it. And it took me like 5 or 6 years to get to realize that it's a different animal.
Yeah, now that's where my training in these matters served me well. I went in there head first. knowing knowing that nobody could have an ego in there, that it was an after image of the chemical body, an after image of even the internet. And the funny thing is,
It was an after image
of the chemical body, and maybe an after image of the Android meme. I intuited that. Because, you know, Croker, I was reading Croker's books in that period, 93, 94, and he really was a really good describer. That's why he's on my chart. He deserved it. You go back and read his books. He laid out the irreality, not unreality, the irreality of the virtual situation. It's real, but nothing to do with chemical body levels of reality or of kinetic bouncing off each other. So what happens, I went on the forums immediately not trying to connect personally like many people did. And I'd end up being hated. But I didn't mind being hated, but people actually accused me of being ingenuous or a fake or a liar. And this is not on all Slack, but in other places within the McLuhan world. They mistook my detachment as aggressiveness because they were there to connect with people in chemical body emotional level.
Right, and I don't know how possible that. I mean, I guess it could happen. But
yeah, there is I mean, people do, you know, internet dating, people match up and do that,
less than 10% of like the interactions.
That's right. And they go meet in the chemical body. That's the purpose. If you stay within the ship body, it will become a flaming, absurd situation. And I was ready for that and enjoyed it, and that's why the outside people can't understand me. Many times somebody would come in after a while and say, he would publicly go right there, I don't understand why Purple can stay here and take all this insight. I don't know what his motives are. What the hell is he doing? And then people say, well, it's a bot, you know, it's not even him. It was hilarious that people trying to interpret it. And, of course, I'm right there reading him. I'm right there in the same space laughing my head off at these guys can't see the chip body effect. They can't see it.
No. They feel like they can – a flame is going to, like, have the same effect. Yeah, they're unable to separate the bodies.
Yeah, now here's what happened. Most of them think I am totally – a brain-dead, non-compos, fucked-up, schizoid retard because they don't. I am not responding. They think your chemical body will eventually get pissed off at what they're saying, and they just can't stand the. How could I be here for 15 years? Be on there for 15 years? Even that, you've been here for 15 fucking years, being a bloody idiot, and everybody hates you. We ignore your posts, and you're still here. They can't understand that. You know what I mean? And they think I must be nuts. And you know, all they have to do is go listen to one of our dialogues or hear me on the radio with Ion. I mean, I just brought forward the most amazing event in human history, Ion. And that, you can't be a schizoid idiot doing that. But I can also be a regular person talking to you and come up with good, sane, interesting insights. They won't allow themselves to experience that part.
No. They can't.
Because they got egos. They got chemical body. The whole subgenius thing is all about celebrating your chemical body ego and aggrandizing, like becoming a Hugh Hefner, and satisfying your chemical body dreams. All the virgins, all the drugs, all the slack you want, right?
Right.
No engagement with any other that interrupts you. That's the 50s consumer's dream of the all slack. And I've always known that and always satirized it on that level. They will make fun of McLuhan, but not even know that. Well, you might know if you understood a bit of McLuhan, you might be able to do better with this church. Make more money.
I mean, it's basically like, it is what it is.
Yeah, but it's a great example of the issues. That's why they don't know. I've told them I'm here because you are a great laboratory of human stupidity in a new environment. And human, you're not uncreative. You're very funny and inventive in what you come up with, but the actual addictiveness or the life you lead around it is fucked up by this, and you don't know. You don't know. I'm pointing to the other bodies for your benefit. They don't know how the kind of creativity you have in instant interaction is not going to serve you well if you don't know the larger context everything's happening in. So I'm constantly there saying you're a laboratory of human stupidity on that level. even though you are intelligent, chemical for typing, good typer, good flamer, but you are stupid because there's a lot more to make this interesting. So because you're stupid, you are my victims in my lab, is what I'm saying.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, good, Bob.
Yeah, well, and so that is, if you know that, you got it covered. You know, we're going to be given great technologies and all kinds of utopian situations, but it'll be by default. If you don't understand the effects beforehand, you won't be able to enjoy it. If you don't know,
it takes you a little while to catch up.
Yeah, yeah.
If you ever do, you should
well, that's
pray
great.
That you catch up.
No, I mean you're in a sense your laboratory report here. That's interesting. You admit it took you 5 or 6 years to realize that there was no chemical body involved in your typing.
Yeah, it did. It did, because I get really, like, my blood pressure would raise and get really upset by what these people think of me, and then I realized, like, well...
you just said it. What they thought of you, and you said, we began the show pointing out how, you know, you shouldn't let people
right.
affect you.
That's
oh, that's
I mean,
where
yeah.
you are now.
Yeah.
That's where you are now.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, so
what did you... I mean, no, since you're pretty forthcoming, what did you think you were doing? That you thought the internet was just... You were trying to establish contact with chemical bodies, and then you would meet them or something. You know, why did you think?
I thought that I could influence. I thought I could influence like their realities. I guess.
Why would you? Okay, that's a normal human ambition, maybe, or a messianic complex. But what the heck could you influence them on that you thought was worth them having?
That you're better than the other Bob.
It was all about me. Now that's
yeah,
pretty
I mean,
funny.
I was never invested in the and then just my by.
Yeah, but we're talking about other forums that didn't involve all Slack or me. Did you had that problem in the other places where I wasn't even mentioned,
oh,
right?
Well, I'm not a big forum guy. I mean, I've only been in like. Probably, let's see, five body thing. There's one dream one. Maybe four or five. And the only problem I had at the other one was there was, it was actually my friend put it together. And everybody in the forum knew each other chemically. And then when we try to translate it into chip body and we'd post things, we'd all end up pissing each other off.
This is really great. This is great evidence right here, what you're talking about. Because it's
right,
happened
so
a million times.
Yeah, so we just stopped doing that. So, yeah, I'm not a huge forum person, really.
So, you
and
know
I
what?
Never, like, really...
That means that forum life is for people who do not have chemical body contact. People have internet forum relationships. Are you there, Kurt?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just that seemed to be went dead a bit. So, this is an important point. You have your. That's why it is a new body. It's a whole life, and it's better you don't meet the person, and you just talk what you're interested in and take it on that level. It's when you bring your chemical body buddies into the same chip body space, it will get screwed up because you're blinded by the fact you know the chemical body.
Right. It's trouble. That's why,
it's
like,
trouble.
I mean, I think, like, the nice thing about stuff like, you know, Facebook is such a light version of a forum.
Yeah.
That it kind of works because all I do is basically do advertisements for my programming. And then once in a while I'll put a clever thing on there. I'll think it's clever. So I don't really ever get into fights with anybody that I know. I keep it real like a PR kind of thing. You know, I don't put what I really think.
Okay. Yeah. No, so there
I keep it clean, you know, because if you put what you really think, then – you're starting that whole shitstorm, and then it's just going to lead to – I just don't do it anymore.
Okay, look at it this way. When you went on the internet, your chemical body had a strong TV landscape and body, and you might get arguing over among your chemical body friends about likes and dislikes in entertainment. That often causes issues. But when you get into Web 2.0 – where the content is not the TV stuff. It's, I don't know if that's the way to say it, but what I'm saying is that when you get to Web 2.0, you actually use that to communicate back to the TV landscape by doing a blog and making fun of whatever's on TV or having opinions or advertising yourself. So actually MySpace allows you to control the chip body space and make it more like a TV screen. Where you're just showing all the wonderful range of consumption you do, all the great groups you know, all the movies you like, you know, and all that stuff you lay out that is yourself. It's more like the TV landscape. When people first went on the internet, we'll call it Web 1.0, they could only talk about the TV landscape and were still involved in it, and they called it their chemical body. And you would argue in this new medium and come to blows, because you would bring your chemical body, TV body into it. But what we are now is that you're more detached from the TV body. It's actually a figure, and you're talking to it. That's what you mean when you say it's an advertisement.
Yeah. Because
now,
everybody like that, I'm not really friends with anybody like on Facebook that I don't know chemically, so it's more just, it's an ad for my
Your consumption lifestyle.
And
also what you produce, things that you make.
Right.
Okay, but that's what Web 2.0 is. It's juggling your chip body, what you make, with your TV consumption, TV landscape consumption stuff. You juggle both in Web 2.0. You couldn't juggle both in Web 1.0. That's the difference. You just were involved in the chip landscape, and it was invisible, and its effects were unforeseen, and therefore problems for your chemical body. But when you have Web 2.0, when you can create your own scene, your own chip landscape, therefore it is figure for you. You can mold your chip body in Web 2.0 and your TV body. Back in the Web 1.0 in the 90s, you couldn't mold your chip body. You were stuck inside it and still trying to figure out what it was and didn't even know what its effects would be.
Well,
so,
you're still trying to imitate.
Yeah.
TV.
The TV landscape. Now you do it consciously, plus you throw in your own cheap body productions, what you make as well as your consumption stuff. But the other thing is, now Twitter may be better because you don't get to say much, and it keeps the long thread that leads to arguments and problems. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's more like, here's the link. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, you can even say go fuck yourself or anything, but you're not going to go lay out an opinion that someone reads and gets pissed off at.
No, because they keep it to that 140 character limit, and it's perfect because there's no time to really express anything meaningful in that short. It's basically haiku. You're just doing haiku.
So. And that reminds me, did you hear about the head of Sun Microsystems? He resigned with a Twittered haiku. He made a haiku style, four lines in very short, about how he resigned. That's how he resigned. I can actually, let's just see, I can bring it up because it was a story. What would that be? Sun Chief Twitter's suicide.
Well, there's going to be like suicide tweets now.
Yeah. Sun Chief.
It's going to be like, thanks for the memories.
Yeah, here it is. Here it is. Sun Chief tweets his resignation. February 4th, 2010. That doesn't sound right, but I thought it was more recent. But at the bottom, what he wrote. Okay. Where's the content? Here's what this is how he resigned. Financial crisis. This was sent to, you know, all the people involved, all the corporate guys. It says he's the first Fortune 200 boss to tweet his resignation. He wrote, financial crisis, / stalled too many customers, / CEO no more. Financial crisis, could that be his own crisis? I don't know, but that's the general disappearance of money. / stalled too many customers, / CEO no more. That's how he resigned.
Wow.
Now, That's pretty interesting, eh? As an effect. No time to even resign.
No, see, that's what I mean. And nobody even knew, you know, it's you know, soon you won't even have to do anything. I think this is where it's going to, like, communication-wise.
Well, that's,
be like,
you know what the prophetic song for that is the song In the Year 2525, 1969. You remember that song?
No.
Okay, let me draw it up. It was a pretty popular song in 1969, and in the year, so I put 1969 lyrics. Isn't this great? You can access anything. Okay, shit, in the year, it didn't come up in the year. When man in the year, maybe I got to put that.
Who did it? Who's the song by?
I have to find. It's a one-hit wonder.
Oh, okay.
Here it is. It's got a Wikipedia entry. Here's what it is. In the year 2525 is a hit song from 1969 by the Lincoln, Nebraska duo Zager and Evans, which reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for the 6 weeks commencing July 12th. Here we are. It's the anniversary. So what is this? 41 years later. The song was written by Rick Evans in 1964 and originally released on the small regional record label Truth Records in 1968. A year later, an Odessa, Texas radio station popularized the disc, which RCA Records quickly picked up for nationwide distribution. So the lyrics go...
Yeah, I'm watching the YouTube of it right now.
Oh, okay. There's a YouTube on back then?
Can you hear that?
Yep.
Well, yeah, that's a perfect prophetic song.
Yeah, let me just read the lyrics. You could keep playing it. I like it.
Okay, yeah, I'll play it.
All right, so that, yeah, okay.
No, it's a important song. I want to go through the lyrics until we get cut off because, you know, in 1967, man died, according to cosmic awareness, the original separateness that created this, the man world, the human world, went back to the plane of essence. So that's a pretty dramatic statement in 67. And then later, when Americans heard more about postmodernism, people like Roland Barthes, they were talking about the author had died. Well, this whole postmodern thing went into a bit about how man had died, at least the patriarchal man. So this song is pretty amazing for, and this guy wrote this in 64. Now look what he says. In the year 2525, if man is still alive, okay, yeah, we might blow ourselves up. There's nothing unusual about that. If woman can survive, that's interesting. It's like, that's pre-women's lib. Can women survive in a rough future, or maybe they'd outlive man and then they'd last longer, but would they survive? So if woman can survive, they may find in the year 3535. So what's that? That's a 1,000 years later?
Yeah.
1,000 years. 1,010 years later.
Yeah.
He's he does the 11. They do the 11. It's 1,010. Each break seems to be adding 1,010. He says, in the year 3535, ain't going to need to tell the truth. Tell no lie. Okay. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. Now, that is the beginning in the 60s of the Valium culture. People were starting to do that. Be on over-the-counter prescription drugs, right?
Yeah.
And your chemical body... What?
Yeah,
and your chemical body just had to perform, just act out the script. It was part of the global theater, being a zombie, and you don't need to tell the truth, tell no lie, because it's starting to become a post-information society. There's just too much happening, and they called it the credibility gap back then. There was a credibility gap in the president or in LBJ or with institutions. So it started to become vague what's true and what's not, so you didn't have to be so fanatic about it. Anyways, everybody's on the pill, adapting to the present. Then he says, in the year 4545, you ain't going to need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's going to look at you. Now, that's more like the digital era.
That's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
You're saying things that nobody cares about.
And nobody even look at you. They can't see you because they're on their cell phone. And they actually live on junk food, and it's you just suck on stuff. You don't need your teeth. And you don't need your eyes. You actually do. Many people think the Internet brought in a very hyper-visual culture, but it's I'd call it a tactile visuality. It has no staying power, so, you do need to see. So I would say this is the chemical – he's talking about the chemical body disappearing. But he doesn't know it can stay around, but it'll be ghettoized and marginalized so that you would still have your teeth and eyes. But he's picking up on its obsolescence. It's gone. Okay?
Right.
So then in the year 5555, your arms hanging limp at your sides. Your legs got nothing to do. Some machine's doing that for you. Now, this is written in 64. That's couch potato land by the 80s. Just people watching TV day and out on welfare or whatever. Spending a lot of time, you know, getting out of shape and getting obese. So he's still focusing on total chemical body effects here. And he thinks it's in 55-55. It's going to happen in 20 years.
Well, plus he's doing the thing which is, like, kind of common, is that he's not, like, taking into account, like, the ability for there to be more than one truth or reality
That's right.
at a time. So he's saying, like, with the introduction of a new kind of landscape, it's going to obsolesce the landscape before it, but that doesn't kind of prove to be true. Because
right.
it's still a chemical body. It's just,
right. So that's right. So see, that's what's interesting about this. This is pop culture. It's pretty prophetic on a certain limited way, but if you bring a college prof or some CIA guy like myself, you can see through it, and it's not sophisticated culture. So that you need a William Burroughs to redo this with more sophistication, so to speak. You know what I mean?